March 26, 2007. Open a public hearing on S. Bill 5542 and Senate Bill 5543, the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Mr. Beiler? Ms. Siebert, do you have anything to start off?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just note that you have your weekly schedule at your place along with today's agenda.
Okay. Just to not be serious, but I hope that by Wednesday everybody's read their Department of Forestry. Poor her. It's only like about
this high.
Will there be a test?
Well, please start, Mr. Beiler, and I guess we're on program prioritization.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Beiler. I'm the director of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. At my right is Lisa Pearson, from our budget analyst from the Department of Administrative Services. On my left is Melissa Leone, who is our senior policy coordinator at OWEB. Chapter 4 of our presentation involves the program prioritization. In developing our program prioritizations, we looked at constitutional mandates, statutory mandates, emphasizing activities that serve the most Oregonians, looking at measures that emphasize on measuring and ensuring program effectiveness and an emphasis on core functions. It's a pretty simple process for us at OWEB since we are, as I know you appreciate, a relatively small agency with few primary functions. The difficulty for us is to parse out our few sections within our program and rank those vis-a-vis each other since they are all part of the same whole from our perspective. As such, what I want to emphasize here is that in the priority one is our grant program. That includes the grant program, the section of our agency that solicits and manages the grant offerings as well as manages the implementation of grant agreements that we have, as well as our fiscal program, which deals with the payment side, the fiscal side, obviously, of our grant program, key to us being able to run our program. We also have right there at the top Watershed Council's support. Those, as I mentioned before, are the local entities that are so important for us to be able to move forward with our program. They're the ones who work with the private landowners to put projects on the ground. And then, of course, we also have our funding, which is without that funding, we have no program. But I have to say that all of 1 through 7 are essentially very intertwined functions of our program, whether it's the funding sources or whether it's our the different sections of our agency. So we have a very hard time in terms of prioritizing those different functions of the agency since they are part of the one whole. The other point I'd like to make is that at number 8 and number 9, we have the IMST and LCREP. This is the Independent Multidisciplinary Science Team and the Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership. Those are pass-through funding to those entities, which are standalone entities. And I don't want to convey that we are ranking those lower than our programs. What we'd prefer to do is just have them on a separate track altogether because they aren't under our purview. Those entities are pass-through, but they are both important with respect to the Oregon plan. The IMST is the Independent Science Review Group for the Oregon plan, which is a very important function for our credibility and for the value of the work, the underlying science of our work. And the Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership, of course, is important as a regional partner dealing with a very important part of the state in the Portland metro area down to the mouth of the Columbia River. So, Mr. Chair, and what I'd also point out on this document at the last page, and this is Section 4, is our 10% reduction. Here we looked at both with OWEB and with IMST and LCREP. We're looking at organizations that are very small. There's not a lot of margin of error in terms of cutting operations. And we put together this 10% reduction package with that in mind, trying to preserve the functions of key core functions of those entities.
Any questions? Any questions? Seeing none, I guess we can go on to policy option packages.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With our option packages, we will have both an overhead for you, but if more detail will be contained in section chapter 5 of your report of our presentation book. At the outset, I want to say a few things. All of our option packages align with KPMs. They're all in one form or another. They involve agency key functions and help move forward in terms of meeting our KPMs, our performance measures. The one caveat I would add to that is that, as we discussed last week, our performance measures are relatively new. Some of them are brand new. And it's going to take some time for us to be able to meet those targets, let alone exceed some of the targets that we're looking at. But these option packages will help move us in that direction. The other point that I would make in our option packages is that they're a little bit different than you will see from most of the other agencies. Several of our packages involve funding, exclusively funding, whether it's our capital grant program or non-capital grant program, or carrying forward committed monies from one biennium to the next. So I'll just step you through that, and Mr. Chair, I'm going to keep this at a fairly high level, and please let me know if you or the committee members would like more information. I'll start with program continuity. This is package 110. This is a position package for our agency, and it essentially involves maintaining our current level of services. It involves positions in a variety of different sections within the agency. The key thematic here is that we're looking at maintaining our service level. It involves four positions that are limited duration that we want to continue, and it involves moving our grant program manager from a limited duration status, which that position has been since its beginning in, I believe, around 2001, and it also involves a fund shift of one position from lottery funds, I believe, to Measure 66 operations funds. In terms of the positions themselves, important positions for meeting our needs, the limited duration positions involve a business application specialist. This is our only information technology position. This position was new this biennium. It has allowed us to make very great strides in terms of moving forward from an efficiency standpoint to be able to provide our grantees greater access to grant management information vis-a-vis the website. And we also are looking to provide technological improvements and go have a little less paper in terms of our grant management with respect to applications and some of the grant forms that we deal with. And this position will be critical for us to be able to maintain the work that we've been able to accomplish thus far and move forward on some of those other key pieces. We also have a federal reporting specialist position. This position was new this biennium as well. It allowed us to eliminate a backlog in reporting our conservation information to the federal government. It's a quarterly reporting process. We coordinate with a number of other agencies in doing those reports. This position will allow us to be able to continue moving forward in meeting those deadlines and providing an important nexus and coordination point with other agencies on reporting this information. We also have a grant payment specialist position that's limited duration. This position is critical to help us continue meeting our 30-day timeline in responding to payment requests from grantees. This position also is very important in helping us meet our needs in terms of processing payments with respect to the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program and the Small Grant Program, which are very active programs in our agency. Also have an office specialist. This person is critical in our grant program to help keep us organized. We have very busy schedule in terms of our grant offerings that require a lot of coordination between our field staff and our Salem staff and within our Salem office. And the office specialist is critical for managing those files and keeping us organized and moving forward and meeting our deadlines. The fund shift involves our effectiveness monitoring position, which is also a position that's new this biennium and critical to our success in being able to understand the effectiveness of the different projects that we fund. That's a program that that we've really hit our stride on this biennium, and we have a lot more work ahead of us, and that position will be important for that work to continue. With that, Madam Chair, I'd move on to our next option package.
I'm going to take questions. I think Representative Gerard has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom, I see a grant program manager, a grant program specialist, a grant program support, but I can't find, and it may be in here, but I can't find, how many grants do you have out there at one time?
Madam Chair, Representative Gerard, we have an ongoing workload. I'm going to look back as I say this, but I think there's about 900 or so ongoing grants that are in progress at any given point in time over the course of the biennium. Meanwhile, that grant program is also busy offering twice a year grant offerings, and where we'll receive scores of applications for restoration grants and technical assistance grants that we process and review. So the workload is not only in terms of offering new grants, but also managing the ongoing grants.
Thank you.
Representative Early.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom, good morning. And you show on the slide there key performance measures 4, 5, 9, and 15, and help me find 15. I don't see that anywhere.
That's that I should be in your materials. That has to do with customer service.
13.
Okay.
Would you point me to the page, please?
In Chapter 3, which is our performance measures, towards the end there's KPM 15, which is customer service.
I'm sorry, what chapter, Tom?
Chapter 3, which was the performance, the KPM discussion.
All right, I was looking at the 0507. Okay.
And page 7 of Chapter 3 has KPM number 15,
okay,
which is customer service.
Okay.
Do you have a follow-up?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. Then, just real quickly, how does 5 and 9 both deal with fish populations and fish monitoring, and I don't quite see the connection based on your description here of how this POP helps those two.
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, that's a good question, and I'll give you our logic train on that. Involves our reporting specialist. And the key here, or our thinking on this one, is that that position, while that position may not be out in the field collecting the data, that position is critical in terms of being able to pull that data from the field and into a database and then into a report to make that data meaningful. So there's essentially a chain of action that occurs from the initial collection of the data that happens in the field to the point where that data can become useful to analysts or to the federal government or to the legislature or any other body. And that federal reporting specialist is a key point along that line in terms of making that data available and useful for decision makers. That's the connection that we saw there.
Other questions? Hey, Tom, I have a question for you. I like to look through, and I don't know how updated this is, but the other notebook with the purple cover, because the Orbitz budget narrative is much more detailed than what's provided in the presentation. But there's a discrepancy in the number from what's presented in Orbitz versus this. And what's listed here, and it's on page 180 of the Orbitz narrative, it's listed as 1,072,752, and I wanted you to reconcile what the differences are. Was something taken out of the budget? Well, this is package 110 right here.
Yeah.
No, right here. 1.072, all funds. So And then my second question was, the funds listed up there, the 906, is that a combination of lottery funds and federal funds? Is that all lottery funds? Because the way it's broken out here, it's a combination.
Madam Chair, just to answer your second question first, it is a combination of federal funds and lottery funds. As to your first question...
I mean, it looks like the positions are the same. Paul thinks that maybe you had a request in here as far as for something about rent. So maybe that was taken out. I'm trying to figure out why there's a difference in what's listed in your orbits. Sorry.
Madam Chair, if I can ask Cindy Cry, our fiscal manager, to Cindy Silbernagel. My apologies.
For the record, I'm Cindy Silbernagel, fiscal manager, and I think what we're seeing is that the package 110. What we are seeing in our budget presentation book is the total of our program units. We've got the 010, which is our operating unit, and the 020, which is our capital unit, and we're moving it from one unit to the other. So when you see the combined, it is 906,473 because we're taking it out of the capital unit, which is a negative, and moving it into the operating unit. So I think that's the difference that you're seeing.
So it's less because it's, I'm just trying to figure out why it's about $100,000 less.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, then what Cindy's saying is if you look in the next tab, which is, I think, 020, you'll find a similar package that takes part of that money away. So the net change for the total budget is the number you saw up there, the 900,000. But for this particular program operations, they're adding a position that was in a different program unit within the budget. So when you just look at that program unit, that's why it's over a million. Because you have the put, but you didn't have the take from the second program.
Just want to make sure that there weren't changes and then that weren't reflected in the budget.
Well, Madam Chair, another thing is that the budget presentation materials are a little bit more up-to-date, and we do find minor adjustments now and then, but I appreciate the question to clarify that discrepancy.
And for the committee's sake, since it's broken down the orbits presentation but not in here, what's the breakdown, excuse me, of the lottery funds versus federal funds? And I'm assuming the federal funds are PCSRF money. And so is there also, if we don't get that money, is there a plan to fill that with lottery funds, or how would that work?
Madam Chair, indeed, these are PCSRF, Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds, that we're looking at with respect to these positions. I believe these positions are funded with what's called PCSRF admin, which I don't believe are at risk, will be pretty good, even if we have diminished federal funding compared to what was estimated in the governor's recommended budget.
And Madam Chair, member of the committee, just to clarify, from the last grant cycle that the department received the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funding money for, they got limitation for a big chunk of the money for grants, but they never got any limitation for the 3% they're allowed for admin. Mm-hmm. So they probably have carryover from this last biennium for administration that they'll use for this package, plus any new 3% admin they would have for new grants. So. Actually, this is probably the most protected part of the PCSRF because they have some money already sitting there to spend.
Okay. All right. Thank you for the clarification. If there's no other questions, we'll move on to the next op.
Option package 115 is carry forward of committed grants, and this package involves $1 million of Measure 66 operations funds that I've discussed in terms of non-capital grant funds. These were available to us this biennium and have been allocated in the form of technical assistance grants, in monitoring grants, and other types of technical assistance grants, or excuse me, of non-capital grants. The purpose of the carry forward is to allow these funds to be moved into the next biennium solely because these grants are ongoing, and we want to be able to continue to keep those grants moving forward. Obviously, the key for us here is that if without these grants moving forward, we'll have a lot of angry grantees who will be upset because we won't be making good on repayment of invoices.
Any questions on this, Pop?
One.
Representative Clark.
Why is it that the grantees haven't fully spent during the time frame? Is it not really required that you do it, or just program-wise it's not possible?
Madam Chair, Representative Clem, it all depends. It depends on the complexity of the project. Some projects get delayed through no fault of their own. Some projects are awarded. We had a whole about $10 million worth of projects, capital and non-capital, awarded 2 weeks ago. We have no expectation that they'll complete those this biennium. In fact, many of them won't even get started until later this summer. So there are a wide variety of reasons why projects may occur between or continue over the two biennia. Next is another position, our second of our third position packages. This has to do with our program reorganization. I mentioned to you last week that as required by a budget note, this biennium, I looked at the organizational structure of the agency and made some revisions to essentially move some staff out of the director's office and reordered them to create a new section within the agency called the Policy and Oregon Plan Coordination Section. And this package essentially would make permanent those administrative reorganization that I did. There's a small net savings of funding, around $8,000 in this package. There are no new positions involved in this. It's all kind of moving some positions around and moving those positions either up or down depending on the need. The designations and the classifications for these positions were made in consultation with Department of Administrative Services, the Human Resources Management Division, and involve staff from all different sections within the agency. There are just to walk you through briefly the positions involved. There's a senior policy coordinator position that would be in our that is in our policy and Oregon plan coordination position. This position is involved in legislative coordination, administrative rules, policy, biennial report development, a lot of special projects depending on the issues at hand. We also have a position that is assigned to our small grant program. This is a $2.8 million program where we distribute funding to 28 small grant teams around the state. These small grant teams are populated by members of watershed councils, soil and water conservation districts, and tribes. And they're responsible for distributing grants locally to their geographic unit. The small grants can be $10,000 or less. But we do have one staff person who full-time manages that program and oversees the work that those small grant teams do. We also, this package also involves our fiscal program manager and monitoring program manager. As our funding and responsibilities increase, so do the responsibilities of our management team, and this package would help address those needs. We also have a package, or as part of this package, in our grant program, a grant program coordinator function, which is designed to provide additional assistance to our grant program manager in terms of all aspects of our grant program, in terms of the solicitation review and processing of our grant applications, as well as the ongoing management responsibilities for awarded grants. This position is also designed to help strengthen our interface with our field staff and the Salem office. We also have in this package an adjustment to our executive assistant position to help us deal with human resources issues. We currently, and I think from the outset at OWEB, have contracted with the Water Resources Department quite successfully in getting human resources advice and services from their unit. We are a very small agency, and it doesn't make sense for us to have a whole human resources shop within our agency. But one thing that that we've done through this reorganization is one thing I've noticed, I guess, is that while it's very useful to have those folks at Water Resources helping us out, they don't really replace having someone in your office who you can go to and ask questions, both from a manager's standpoint and from a staff standpoint. And we've created that within our office through the executive assistant position in the director's office. And I think it's been a real benefit to us as a management team at OWEB, and I think it's also been a helpful resource for our staff. This position is not intended to replace the services at Water Resources, but mainly to provide an initial point of contact and a conduit for our staff to work with the Water Resources HR folks.
Any questions, Representative
Flynn? Are we also discussing the performance measures linked to those or not quite yet?
Well, if you have a question about that specifically, I think this would be a good time to ask it.
I just see that you're actually making significant progress on, I guess it's performance measure number one. Well, the one that's called Operate 20, yeah, the 0709 number one operations as a percentage of total funding used in agency operations, and 6% had sort of been the target going on, and you're down now. You went from 5, 4.6, 3.7. And what I don't know is about, you know, performance measure theory here. Do we ideally want to keep moving the target down incrementally as well? You know, you can't get down to zero, but they're obviously now under 4, so it seems like 5.5 would be something that would be reasonable at some point, you know, in 09 or 08.
Any other questions? Or do you want to respond to
just, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll certainly note that for a work session. And I think part of it's too a function of the more money that goes into the agency, because lottery just keeps going up, the smaller percentage that the operations takes up overall anyway. So I think it's certainly certainly justified to look at changing that target.
Okay. Up 130, 140.
Madam Chair, this is a commingling of option packages that OWEB brought forward. 130 has been for Watershed Council support, and 140 is for our non-capital grant programs. And in consultation with Mr. Siebert, we have put these together since they essentially cover very important non-capital purposes for our agency. And there's I think roughly a little over $14 million total in this. Not to beat a dead horse, because we talked about this issue a lot last week, it's of key importance to our agency to be able to have sufficient resources to fund the organizational capacity for watershed councils, to be able to fund the design and planning work that technical assistance grants allow us to do at a local level, as well as the education and monitoring, of course, which is important for us to be able to build community around watershed health and to understand the value of our investments over time. Essentially, this is a funding package and will allow us to receive funds for the continuation of our program.
Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom, on page 12, it says this POP provides non-capital funds for grants for watershed-related activities that support and enhance capital-funded restoration projects. Could you give me an example of how that works together, a capital-funded restoration versus a non-capital?
Madam Chair, Representative Garrard, thank you for that question, and I can't resist saying the refrain that I say around the office where most of the staff roll their eyes in the back of their heads, but I keep saying it anyway, and that is the capital funds don't spend themselves. Those are the most plentiful and most important funding that we have because those fund restoration projects. But you've got to be able to have what I call the local infrastructure on the ground in order to be able to make this happen, and that's a variety of different things, and that's funded by these non-capital dollars. So, for example, it's not enough just to have an interested landowner. We all know that landowners are busy, and they're working 24 hours a day. It's helpful to have adequate support for the local watershed council. That's the council support, which is a non-capital fund expenditure, to be able to work with that landowner to develop a project and develop the interest and develop the relationship to and trust for that landowner to even want to step forward and take take advantage of the opportunity. Another non-capital expense that leads to a restoration grant and a capital expenditure is the technical assistance. So the council may apply to OWEB for a technical assistance grant to design a project on the landowner's property. And that's, thank you. We have in our appendix, and what you see here on the slide is a more detailed description of our different types of grant offerings. And I won't go into much detail on those today, but I just want you to be aware that those are there to give you a little better feel in terms of the different types of grants and what they do. So that technical assistance grant will then develop and design a project for that landowner's property. After that work is done, then the Watershed Council, in partnership with the landowner, can apply for a restoration grant with OWEB. And then, assuming they're successful, that project is put on the ground. And then there's an opportunity for monitoring to occur, and that is a non-capital expense. That monitoring is important to understand the on-the-ground success of that project. We also learn from that, and there's a feedback loop. If we're doing our job well, there's a feedback loop so that the work at the monitoring end of the spectrum, what we learn from that, we want to feed into that technical assistance side so that as we're building and designing these projects that lead to restoration projects, we're making sure that we're not doing it in a silo, that we're actually learning from the past experiences and the monitoring data that we collect over time.
Quick follow-up, Chair. Would this, could you form a partnership or a capital funding project with a large corporation such as Pacific Power?
Madam Chair, Representative Garrard, certainly.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Okay, Tom, I need clarification since the number in the orbits report, once again, which has a lot more detail. I have to say it's sort of confusing because the amount of detail in the orbits report is really good, but it's not in this presentation, so I'm looking at both. So I need, for the record, to know exactly how much non-capital grant money is going towards the watershed councils and how much for SWCDs, because it's not clear how that the breakdown of that.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll take a quick run at this, and then I'll look to your LFO staff and my budget person to mop up after I've messed this up a little bit. I think to start off, what we've struggled with in OWEB's budget, and this is both in with OWEB and the Department of Agriculture, is a bit of confusion in how the governor's recommended budget laid out funding support for watershed councils and for soil and water conservation districts. As I've said many times before you, those entities are critical local partners for us to be able to move projects forward. The Department of Ag and OWEB in their agency request budget had asked for $6 million for councils, and OWEB had asked for $6 million for councils, and Ag had asked for $6 million for districts. The governor's budget, when it first came out, appeared to, and it was my impression that the intent was to fund councils and districts at around $4 million apiece with some specific narrative advice to OWEB to be able to fund those entities at a higher level through available discretionary non-capital funds. at the outset of starting in January, there was a bit of confusion in terms of how we pieced that together. Rather than walk you through that detail, I think that maybe the best thing to say is that at this point, I think there's an agreement between between OEB and LFO and an understanding with respect to Department of Ag and the Governor's Office that $4 million is the starting point, roughly $4 million is the starting point for councils and districts. What would be available then in these funds in packages 130 and 140 would be the opportunity for the board to be able to provide additional funding above and beyond that $4 million for councils into the biennium. So the starting point now, and it's not reflected clearly, but when you look at these two documents, and I apologize for that, but the starting point now and the understanding now is that we're looking at line items for councils and districts at roughly $4 million in each, and that there would be potentially funding available through the non-capital grant package that you see here to add money.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just to clarify too, while the GRB may have intended to have 4.1 for soil and water conservation districts, in fact it's about $650,000 short of the transfer amount, because when they put it together to compare to watershed councils, Department of Ag has a few positions that also work with soil and water conservation districts that aren't part of the transfer that goes out to the districts, and they counted that. So in short, they're about $650,000 short. That whole is taken care of in the co-chair's budget at this point.
It's added back in.
Yes, it's added back in the co-chair's budget with Measure 66 operations, lottery funds, operations dollars to bring both just under $4.1 million.
And a follow-up to that, Tom, if lottery funds end up actually exceeding what was projected, is there an opportunity to come to the e-board or next session, not quite sure how the e-board's going to work, to look at adding additional non-capital funds for SWCDs or councils?
Madam Chair, if that opportunity arose, we would certainly want to take advantage of it.
So at this point, though, there's about a $2 million discrepancy, it's actually $4 million total, between the governor's recommended and, or what folks thought, because I heard $6 million, I've heard 4.1, I've heard all different types of numbers, so I just want to be clear for the record what's being proposed in this package.
Madam Chair, there are a lot of numbers, and there has been some confusion. I apologize for that. In terms of this package, this commingles council support and the other non-capital sources, and would, if passed, provide the board discretion to be able to add funding, additional funding for capacity for watershed councils or soil and water conservation districts. But the starting point, again, is about a little under $4.1 million in terms of the line item for those two entities.
Any other questions? Thanks for that clarification.
Package 150 is our last position package. This is called our program enhancement package, and this involves a request for five new positions for our agency. The positions, I'll walk you through those positions briefly. These positions involve, one is a sixth field staff person for us, and the need here is pretty straightforward. We benefit, and our landowners and our local groups benefit from having FaceTime with our staff out in the field. Being able to have our staff attend watershed council meetings, be able to meet with soil and water conservation districts, be able to go out on landowners' property before, during, and after projects are implemented is invaluable. And now we currently have five staff, and they are understandably stretched pretty thin in terms of being able to do all the work that we'd like them to be able to do to make our presence a productive one, to be able to provide the kind of technical advice and guidance to help our stakeholders be successful in what they're doing. So that's the first position, and this is a regional program representative. Another position that we are seeking is a technical assistance coordinator. This position will also strengthen our field presence, but with a very specific and more narrow focus on technical assistance. I've mentioned that this is an incredibly important area of work for our agency in terms of being able to provide the kinds of technical expertise to our grantees so that they can put together strong projects on the ground. And what we don't have in-house right now is anyone who has that specific kind of expertise. Nor do we have anyone who is dedicated solely to that program area. We, with this position, would be able to provide added value to our stakeholders by having a point of contact in our agency to provide advice and to also provide guidance in terms of where to go to get the right kind of advice related to developing projects. In some cases, our grantees don't know even what are the best questions to ask, and this position could help our grantees and point them in the right direction to valuable resources that they will need to be able to move forward with projects. This position also would be responsible for managing our technical assistance grant offerings, which at the moment we don't have anyone who is specifically focused on that function. And I think we would add value to our work by adding a greater strategic focus in that in those grant offerings in the future. Third position involves an Oregon Plan Communications Coordinator position. This would be an outreach and awareness position within our agency. It's a position we've had staffed in the past, but not over the last two biennia. And it's a position that I would very much like to see back in the fold within our agency, and there are several reasons for that. First and foremost is that we have a statutory mandate to promote awareness of the Oregon Plan and of OWEB's programs. Our success is dependent upon people and landowners being aware of us and wanting to partner with us. And we would greatly benefit from having a position in-house where we could help with those outreach efforts to get people interested in participating in our program. Landowners are critical for that, and this position would help us with that. This position would also help us with respect to our non-capital education grants. Much like I mentioned with our technical assistance, we don't have anyone in-house who has kind of sole responsibility for our education program and our education grant offerings. This position would give us that added muscle and would help us be more strategic in terms of our future grant offerings with respect to education. The fourth position in this package is a data analyst information specialist. This would be added to our monitoring and reporting section. And this position will be important for us and for the state in terms of being able to access and analyze data from a wide range of different agencies and different databases. And it's something that we've learned about in recent years as we've gone through a very detailed assessment of the coastal coho in conjunction with the Department of Fish and Wildlife and other agencies. We're realizing that there are, as we get more strategic on a broader geographic scale, it really requires a marriage of data sets from different agencies and different types of data. And this analyst position will help us be able to make sense of that data, to help others make sense of that data, to help the public and other agencies know where to find the different data sets that will be important to them. And as we get into our recovery planning in different parts of the state, this position will add great value to our efforts as well as to the state's efforts in moving forward on those particular objectives. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions on that package 150.
I had one quick question about the NRCS for the regional program representative is the only non-limited duration position. And my understanding is, and because you're adding a new region, so this is going to be ongoing, do you have thoughts about rollover or for any of these other positions? Are you planning to see the value of these since they're all limited duration And you know, it might help us think about the fiscal impacts for the next biennium.
Madam Chair, that's a great question. My sense is that these positions could all have long-term value for our program. I think that perhaps part of our thinking in terms of the request had less to do with the long-term thinking of our agency needs and more to do with maybe some of the practical realities of budget requests. But we think that I would expect that these positions will have long-term value for us. I'm very confident of that, and especially with our expanding capital grant program. I think the need for these positions will continue over time and will provide greater value for our stakeholders out in the field as well as our program. Thank you. Our last package is package 200, and this is a pretty straightforward package for us. This is our capital grants package. This is the fabled 65% of Measure 66 that OEB receives. This is in seemingly an ever-increasing number over the last three biennia. I think two biennia ago we were looking at about $25 million of Measure 66 capital funds. This biennium we had about $41, $42 million. And as you can see, that going into this next biennium, we may have nearly $61 million. That's a great opportunity for a lot of good work to happen, and it certainly at the same time creates some challenges for us in terms of making sure that those restoration projects are put on the ground in an effective manner.
I just was asking him about the IMST package, because I know that IMST is funded as a separate line item, but I don't know if you want to mention about package 160 after we're done with this.
I'd like to hear about that.
If you have questions on the capital grants.
Yeah. Okay. Tom, there's $9 million in carryover funds. Am I interpreting those numbers correctly? That's a large carryover.
Capital?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there shouldn't really be any carry forward for. Is there carry forward in the capital side? No, there shouldn't really be any carry forward in the capital side, because that's one reason why we give them 6-year limitation.
Well, I believe that's how it's labeled, but I'm not. I have to go back to what it was.
What page of the presentation were?
Tab 8.
Tab 8?
Page 3. What Representative Gerard is referring to is the line that says 0507 unallocated carryover capital.
Certainly. Okay. I can explain that, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The key there is unallocated. It was not, the agency was not given expenditure limitation at the beginning of last biennium, and that really is what you see is the increase in the lottery revenue from close of session to now. Is really what the unallocated 0507. So that's how much the lottery went up above what we anticipated in their budget for 0507. Now they came in to an emergency board during the interim and got a little bit of that money for the fisherman emergency. They used some of the 0507 unallocated monies for that. But other than that, that's pretty much what you're looking at, is lottery growth.
Question.
Follow up.
And I think this is a question. So tell me what happens to that money now. Where is that? Is that money just carried over into this budget?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Gard, you're correct. That just carry over into this biennium. What it does, it sits in their funds. It collects interest. That interest goes into the research fund to be used for their research projects. And other than that, it sits there until they come this biennium to get limitation. So we just add it to the total that's forecasted for 0709. You have how much the lottery forecast says, how much they got that they didn't get any authority to spend last time, and then that's the total resource. Now, they have a package for $1 million in carryover limitation, which is money that they were given but couldn't spend. And so they need limitation to spend. That's on the operations side, the $1 million. That was the package they went over. But as far as this together, you see just what we anticipate in the forecast, what was carried over and unused. So they have an opportunity, if the same thing were to happen this interim, they can come to the emergency board like they did and get some limitation for the unanticipated increase in lottery.
Makes this agency very suspicious, Madam Chair, when you give them $1 million and they can't find a way to spend it. I mean,
Madam Chair, may I clarify that?
Sure. I think you might want to, for the record, clarify that one, Tom.
That $1 million of Measure 66 operations carry forward, Madam Chair, Representative Girard, have been committed to grants, and those are being, but they haven't. We haven't. Those grants are ongoing into next biennium, and with Measure 66 operations, we don't have a 6-year limitation period. So this is the first time we've had Measure 66 operations in our non-capital grant program. So it's the first time we've had a carry forward issue with those dollars. But they have, from our board's perspective, they've been awarded to grants. It's just that the monies have not been fully distributed as per those grants yet.
Follow up. So who decides on that $1 million whether it goes into capital or non-capital?
Madam Chair, Representative Girard, the Constitution lays that out with respect to the total lottery funds that are available at the December revenue forecast, for example, and then there's 65, at least 65 is marked off for the capital.
Any other questions on this package or package 150? And then if you could address the IMST enhancement package. Well, I don't know if, Paul, you want to talk about that. That was the one that wasn't recommended, and that's separate from the IMST. The IMST is in your budget, but this was a package that was an enhancement for the budget. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes. For the record, I know Nancy Molina, who is one of the co-chairs of the MST, had intended to be here today, and I got a voicemail and an email from her this morning. She has a stomach flu. We'll see if she can be here tomorrow, because she would be in a much better position to talk about IMST's program than I. With respect to the IMST, they are part of our budget as passed through. The number off the top of my head is around $600,000 roughly. There was an agency request option package to increase the funding for that entity by roughly $300,000, which would have put the IMST at a level that they had been at from an operations standpoint about two biennia ago, I believe. Their funding had been cut one or two biennia ago, and over the last two biennia, they've been operating on around a $600,000 budget. That package did not get approved in the governor's recommended budget, so I'm not in a position to probably go into much more detail than that.
Madam Chair, I don't work for the governor, so I can't tell you what his thinking was for not approving that budget.
And just to clarify, the IMST pass-through money and the source of funding for that, just for committee members to make sure that they understand.
Madam Chair, both IMST and the Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership are separate entities that have pass-through funding. They're both funded with Measure 66 operations or non-capital funding.
Question.
Quick question. Tom, what is the definition of multidisciplinary?
Madam Chair, Representative Girard, I think that what in this case it means you have a group of scientists with varied disciplines. They have different backgrounds. They could have forest health. It could be ag sciences. It could be rangeland. And the key for this group is to have a group that reflects a lot of different disciplines, science disciplines, so that they can provide good input and feedback on the wide range of different natural resource management issues and science questions that come their direction.
I'd never heard that term used.
Okay.
It's a difficult one to say as well.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll take a couple of quick more questions, and I'm going to have you go through the efficiencies, and then we're going to have the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program up since you're here. So, Representative Burley and Clem.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Vice Chair. Tom, I noticed with all these policy option packages that out of the 15 key performance measures, they hit all but three of them. And those three all happen to be with dealing with threatened and endangered species. I'd like you to touch on that a little bit. And also, Madam Vice Chair, under tab 7, the annual performance progress report, I'm presuming we're going to get to that in a future meeting. Is that correct?
I don't know if you'll have time to go through both efficiencies and the performance progress report after this.
Madam Chair, it depends on how much detail you'd like.
If we can quickly.
The reason I ask is I would be more than happy to withhold my conversation about 10, 11, and 12 until we get to tab 7, if that would be your preference.
Yes.
Okay.
Representative Klein.
I think what I might do also, my question's IMST related, but I think maybe we'll wait and see if the person is here tomorrow, and if not, ask it tomorrow.
Okay.
And then let them get back to me.
Tomorrow is are we taking testimony? Public testimony?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, public testimony is scheduled for tomorrow, but I let Tom know there should be 10 or 15 minutes available for IMST if she's feeling better for Nancy to come talk tomorrow.
Thank you.
Madam Vice Chair, if I may, if we're going to do public testimony tomorrow, at what point, may I ask, are we going to have the opportunity for the committee to discuss tab 7, the annual performance?
Well, we may now, if we can go through what I was going to ask time right now, is to go through the efficiencies, which won't take very long, tab 7, and then I think we'll have Lower Columbia River Restoration Program come up. We should have enough time to do all three.
Thank you.
So why don't you go ahead with chapter 6.
Chapter 6 is our efficiencies report. We have in that chapter of your presentation book, essentially two pages. One is a memo that provides a little context around the way we look at our program. And the main point here that I'd like to convey to you is that we have an expanding program, and it's expanding because of these dedicated lottery funds that we have. And as a result, with an expanding program, finding efficiencies is an ongoing challenge for us, because we're scrambling to meet the needs with the growth of our program while also looking to be as efficient as we can. What we've found is that an area that we've made great progress on, and I'm very optimistic that we'll be able to move forward and do even more, is in terms of looking at new technologies. And that's a big emphasis in terms of the document that you have in your binder, where we've been able to make great strides with respect to our grant management system. Not only for our staff in terms of especially our field staff being able to access real-time data with respect to grants, being able to access historical data with respect to grants through a database accessible through the Internet, but also our grantees are able to access this information for their own purposes, which helps them track the reporting deadlines and other pieces that are important for them in terms of managing their grants. Our hope and expectation is through the earlier option package that I discussed, package 110, I believe, would be to continue our information technology focus into this next biennium, where we would be able to offer online grant applications so that folks would cut down on paper for our grantees. It would also add efficiency in terms of the data that we would be managing in-house, as well as some of the forms that we have with respect to grant management. Grant amendments could be put online and would add some greater ability for us in terms of dealing with those sometime needs. We also have some relatively modest savings that we're proposing here for the next biennium, having to do with our one has to do with one of our option packages, package 120, I believe, and the other has to do with our biennial report, where we're looking at creating some efficiencies with respect to how we distribute that, looking at CD-ROM opportunities as well as a stronger use of the Internet for that data. So, and probably the last thing I'll mention is that we also intend to have some listening sessions this spring and into the summer with our grantees around the state to to check in with them about the process and to get their feedback on what they're finding to be perhaps not as efficient use of their time and our time, get their perspective, and we will, after going through that process and listening to their issues and concerns and ideas, we'll take a look at whether there are some things that we can do within our grant program to make things better for them as well as for ourselves.
On efficiencies. All right, let's move on. Then the last part will be the annual performance partnership. You can walk us through that, and we'll take questions, and then have Demarion come up.
Madam Chair, I'm going to ask Greg Sieglitz, if I may, our monitoring program manager. He's also our guru on performance measures, and if I could ask him to step you through this.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Greg Sieglitz, monitoring reporting manager for OEB. Chapter 7 consists of our annual report, essentially from last year, to the Oregon Progress Board, LFO, and BAM. It incorporates a number of performance measures that we have subsequent to this report modified through the Joint Legislative Audit Committee in response to our budget note, and also some proposed changes that we went through with you last week. So one thing that you'll notice in this report is that there are a number of performance measures where it's not clear that we're making progress yet. I believe it's five of the 13. That's in large part due to the fact that even at that time, those were new performance measures, but some of the changes that we've requested through the Joint Legislative Audit Committee and with this budget presentation to you, we believe would help move us forward in being able to measure some of those performance measures more accurately, but also be able to deliver on the ultimate outcome that is requested of those measures. Madam Chair, did you want me to walk through each performance measure or entertain questions on specific measures?
Why don't we take questions on specific elements? I think Representative Burley had a question.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. The thing, particularly with respect to KPM 10, 11, and 12, but also, I mean, this is still, you know, 5, it's also applicable, my comment, to the public, if you look at, for example, let's look at number 10, which is federal endangered species. The percent of Oregon species listed as T&E under the federal ESA that have been delisted. The goal here is to make effective and accountable investments in watershed health. Well, that gives the public the impression that for every dollar we put into watershed projects is going to go towards the delisting of a species. Now, I find it hard to believe that that's going to help the spotted owl or the marbled murrelet get delisted, the great wolf for that matter. I think what we're doing is setting up a very false expectation that can come back and bite us when we try to renew Measure 66, because people are going to point at that and say, well, it didn't do a damn bit of good. And, there's so many factors affecting the delisting decision. And for that matter, under 5, there's so many factors that affect a fish population, even a resident trout population. I think what we need to be looking at is, are the dollars getting to the ground? Are we restoring wetlands? Are we restoring riparian habitat? Are we restoring, you know, the pool riffle ratio and the large woody debris and all these things that we can measure? But we have no idea that those things are really going to result in the change of the trout population or the number of coho salmon necessarily, especially salmon, because the ocean conditions have so much to play in that. So my concern with these things is that we're creating a false expectation, and what's going to happen is we're going to see over time, especially with the federal T&E species, that we're not going to meet these targets. It's just not going to happen because that's not within your control.
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair's back.
Thank you. Representative Burley, we've struggled with the same question, and you are it was an astute observation to notice that we didn't list those three performance measures associated with our POPs, because we just can't feel like we can connect those dots very well. And so we've struggled with that, and those are worthy goals. The delisting are things that are in our they're in Oregon statutes, and they're something that we're all striving towards in with respect to natural resources agencies. But those decisions, as I know you appreciate, are difficult to come by. They are often political and legal in nature, and we have a hard time connecting our program to those, even though that we see those as very valuable high-level outcomes. Being able to measure our performance against those is been a challenge that we haven't been able to figure out yet.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I may just comment, I would very, very strongly encourage this subcommittee, the Ways and Means Committee, LFO, whomever, to revisit these key performance measures. I mean, as much as I would love to see these species delisted, I think that we're doing ourselves a huge disservice by even suggesting that OWEB, through investing Measure $66, can have such a direct and immediate impact on delisting the species. It just is a false expectation, and I really would encourage that we revisit these things and fix them, because it's not going to happen.
Mr. Chair, I will chime in here with my colleague, because when we went over these initially, I refrained from commenting because I seem to comment a lot on the performance measures. But I will agree, I think 10, 11, and 12 could be goals of the agency. But I have the same heartburn about having it as a performance measure, because first of all, 2%, we're talking about a pretty small percentage. And if that doesn't happen for 20 years, then somebody can point to you and say, you're not doing your job because you haven't delisted or you haven't prevented these species from being listed. And I think it's a pretty high bar. I think it's, like I said, I agree with my colleague, it's a goal. We all support it. But to have your budget sort of, connected to that, I think it's a really tough thing. And that's where I get heartburn with some of these performance measures.
Yes.
I'm not fully understanding the relationship between listing or delisting in your board anyway. I can see why you have one small piece of that bigger pie with regard to a species, but I don't see how it becomes so significant that it ends up in any way related to something like this.
Mr. Chair, Senator Avakian, there are indirect connections that our investments hopefully will improve habitat and water quality to the point where it will contribute towards rebuilding of listed populations of whatever species to the point where hopefully those species will be delisted off of the state Endangered Species Act or the Federal Endangered Species Act. And we are a player in that, but we're a piece of a much larger puzzle, and there are a lot of moving parts, many of which we have absolutely no control over within our agency. Our best efforts are to contribute towards improving watershed health, and if we can be a player in helping moving the ball forward on these listing questions and issues, great. But we don't have much control over those outcomes ultimately, other than improving the habitat.
Well, that kind of answers the question with regard to it being a performance measure, then, doesn't it? A performance measure needs to be something that you have control over. Otherwise, the effect of it has no bearing on the money you get, in my mind.
I might point out, while that I'm in agreement with the parties that have spoken, if that's your criteria, and I think actually Senator Avakian will agree with me here also, going to a totally different budget, when we're in the Department of Ed budget, we've had comments, particularly from Senator Morse, who's on that subcommittee, that in a sense, he doesn't see the department literally having the authority for many of the items that are listed as the performance measures for the Department of Ed. meaning the superintendent of public instruction, really does not manage individual school districts, nor would many people want the superintendent of public instruction to do that. But still, they're held to performance measures that would give you an indication that they had some control over that. I think this is actually one step even well beyond that, though. And I'm going by Representative Burley's comments, is that there are so many factors that you, even if you did have complete control over the projects, which you do to a large extent, there's so many factors that might affect whether what happens with a species that there are factors that you don't have any control over at all. And so I think it's even a step farther. I don't know particularly. I mean, I think one of the things that we could do, if the committee was willing to go there, is at least attach a budget note reflecting our concern over those performance measures, and that the department, I don't want you to work with the Joint Interim Audit Committee, but the department should, and I don't mean that in a negative way. but I do think just stating that we have reservations about those performance measures would be something good to do at this particular point. That at least would help us develop a history. And maybe that would lead to you coming in with some recommendations to move them to another area or to delete them in a future biennium.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm fine with that. In a more immediate and practical sense, too, and speaking only for myself, it'd be good for the co-chairs to know that when we have a discussion like this about a performance measure like this, I completely disregard it in my own mind right now in deciding what to do with the budget for this department. And at the same time, want to clarify that that is in no way a criticism of the department. The structure that we have set up forces them to try and find some objective way of justifying how they spend their money. That's a dynamic that we've imposed upon them, and sometimes it pushes them into a box like this where I don't know that it's particularly helpful because, you know, what are you going to do? But so, Mr. Chair, I agree with you on the direction we should take in a more formal sense, and in a less formal sense, I'm just going to completely disregard this and my decision about what to do with their budget.
Where do we go next? To the next performance measure, the final one?
Well, we're done. We were talking about efficiencies, and then talked about bringing up the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program.
Okay. So you've went through these again. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll go on then to the Lower Columbia River.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just for a little historical context while we're changing places, the TPMs you're referencing were added two sessions ago by the legislature. The agency didn't bring them forward. The legislature added those. Just so you know.
Thanks for that, Paul.
Okay. That was my guess.
Yeah. And I am not surprised. I'm not surprised. Thank you.
Please proceed and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee. My name is Deborah Marriott. I'm the Executive Director of the Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership. We are based in Portland, Oregon, and we work in the 31 communities from Bonneville Dam to the Pacific Ocean in both Oregon and Washington. We are a two-state program. I first want to start by thanking you for your past support of the Estuary Partnership. You have been supporting us since 1995, and I appreciate very much the opportunity to meet with you today to discuss our 2007-2009 budget request. We are requesting continuation of approximately $300,000, I think it's $314,000, in the Oregon 2007-2009 budget. That represents essentially just a small increase for inflation that I believe the state inserts automatically. We've been funded at this level since we began in 1995. In terms of what we will be providing for you in the next 2 years, should we receive these funds, first, the Estuary Partnership will bring back to you a significant amount of money as a result of your investment. Your funds are matched immediately by the state of Washington at the same level. There's been a gentle persons agreement since we began in 1995 that the two states would provide that shared responsibility for base funding. And in turn, the state's funding then secures the federal National Estuary Program funds that we qualify for as part of the National Estuary Program. Beyond that, the Estuary Partnership leverages your dollars in the public and private sector to receive significant other funds. We've secured $6.3 million from Bonneville Power for 2007 through 2010, and we're projecting $750,000 from NOAA Fisheries for the same period. We will also commit to providing for you continued environmental results with the investment that we hope you will make. We expect to serve 20,000 children in our classroom, field programs, and service learning projects. We project working with another 300 teachers during that time frame. We estimate that with the funds from Bonneville and NOAA Fisheries, we will be able to restore between 2,000 and 3,000 acres of habitat with our local partners. We will continue our monitoring of toxics and conventional pollutants, and we're actually adding now some drug and pesticide take-back programs. And we'll continue work with our water trail, which helps get local citizens of all ages out on the river to not only appreciate the resource, but also economically support some of the local businesses along the way. And then, of course, the Estuary Partnership integrates with a number of other major programs, including the state's salmon recovery efforts, the NOAA Fisheries recovery efforts of threatened and endangered species. We also work on threatened and endangered species of other non-salmonid populations like the white-tailed deer. We'll continue to work with the Power and Planning Council, Power and Conservation Council, to implement their sub-basin plan. And, of course, we integrate very heavily with the Environmental Protection Agency and its water quality programs. We are part of, we are rooted in the Clean Water Act, so we're very focused on water quality and toxics reduction. The partnership has three primary objectives as we carry out our work. We are focused on protecting the ecosystem and the species within it. We do that largely through our objective of restoring 16,000 acres of habitat by the year 2010. We do a second program area for us is reducing toxic and conventional pollutants, and a third program area is to provide information to a range of audiences. And we have focused our efforts on children, looking at them as an opportunity to provide science-based programs with their teachers to expand their opportunities for applied learning with the sciences, both in the classroom and in the field. We think we add three primary things to what you hope to achieve in Oregon. First, a regional framework. Before the Estuary Partnership existed, there was no entity that was looking at both Washington and Oregon and working in both states with all of the communities, knitting together the efforts of a lot of local entities, including the watershed councils and local governments. So through our efforts, we've brought those groups together in a number of key ways. One of the most significant to us is the map that I think a number of you are looking at. That map shows is an inventory of the habitat restoration projects that are occurring and have occurred since 1999 in the study area. That documents 89 projects that are underway or have been completed by the major entities working with us. It represents nearly 10,000 acres of restored habitat since that time frame, and the partnership is responsible for supporting financially about 4,000 of those acres and about 26 of those projects. Another area, smaller area that we work in collaboration with others, we have purchased spill kits for the Oregon Marine Board for them to provide to local marinas so they can improve their environmental programs and reduce the effects of spills should they occur in any of the marinas in the Lower Columbia River. The second thing we bring, and I've touched on this before, but it's important, we bring a lot of money to the region that otherwise would not come here if we were not working. Because we are a two-state entity, because we are tied to the Environmental Protection Agency, we have access to funds that and can manage funds in such a way that several major investors, including Bonneville Power, are comfortable providing significant resources to us. Bonneville Power, from 2003 to 2010, will have invested about, I believe it will be about $9.5 million in the Estuary Partnership. 85% of the funds that they invest in us go back out the door to local efforts, including support for local watershed councils. In the 3 years that we have just completed with them, representing about $4.5 million, we've provided over about $1 million to local watershed councils in the lower river, helping them open up about 15 miles of habitat and protecting several hundred acres of habitat. I was interested in the questions earlier about threatened and endangered species and using that as a performance measure. I was very supportive of the conversation that you were having. I think it's a difficult measure, and it's certainly one of our goals. One of our primary concerns is recovery of threatened and endangered species, but I appreciate very much the comments on looking at factors that are within our control, and we, like OWEB, focus very much on ecosystem improvement, habitat restoration, wetland protection, to achieve our results as well. We also bring to the area, in terms of money, a lot of private support that otherwise was not being focused on the lower river. The private sector support in our budget now represents about 13% of our total budget. 5 years ago it was zero, so we've worked hard to make sure that local corporations and local individuals, as well as private foundations, are actually making an investment with your funds, so you can be assured that local communities are supporting the investment that you're making, as well as the state and the federal government. We use a lot of our private monies, almost all of our private monies, actually to support our school programs. It's not the education program is not a huge component of our budget, but probably it's the most important investment that we're making. We, as I mentioned, go into the schools. We work with teachers to help them develop the curriculum they need to meet benchmark requirements at grade level. And then we go back and deliver the curriculum either once, if that's what they would like, or several times throughout the school year to expand their curriculum. And when we really highly encourage an outdoor application of those classroom lessons, so the kids are actually getting outside, experiencing Oregon and the Northwest. And research shows very clearly that when children get to do that, not only are their skills enhanced for that subject matter, but they're also expanding their critical thinking skills. And we help building a generation of stewards that will help us all advance the work that you're concerned about here today. The third thing we do bring to the Lower Columbia River, to Oregon and Washington, is on-the-ground results. As I said, 85% of the funds that we raise go back out the door for projects, including the restoration work we do, monitoring, and our education programs. In the past 2 years, we've worked with 6,000 citizen volunteers planting native species, removing invasive species. We have just this past month had five citizen volunteer days where several hundred citizens were out planting trees, and even in the rain on this past Saturday. Two-year cycle have worked with 4,000 students in service learning programs, which is a growing requirement of several school districts. We will work with about 20,000 children over the 2 years in our school programs. We also train teachers so they can deliver these programs themselves. We've received funds from NOAA Fisheries to develop the recovery plan module for the lower 146 miles of the river. And we've just completed our first round of monitoring for toxics and conventional pollutants. The Bi-State program, which was our predecessor, found several significant problems in the river, and we're continuing to see those, as well, not only legacy pollutants such as DDT and PCBs, but also emerging contaminants, flame retardants and pharmaceuticals, stuff we're dumping down the toilet that we shouldn't be dumping down the toilet. I'm right there. Thank you. That was it. I just want to thank you very much for your support. I think you appreciate very much the sustained effort that's needed for environmental protection, and we'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Yes, Representative Felt.
Thank you, Jeff. Could you, for the committee, explain how you work with OWEB? In other words, to make sure, because a number of the projects that you list are with watershed councils, and I know you work both in Washington and Oregon, but to make sure that you're not duplicating efforts and coordinating with OWEB, I think it would be helpful for the committee to hear how you work with those councils to assist them to actually put the projects on the road.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder. We really value our relationship with OWEB and the fact that we are a pass-through in their budget because our missions and goals are so well aligned in terms of protecting the watershed. We do have a grant contract obligations with OWEB, so there are some oversight obligations from the administrative front. And then as far as partnerships and building on each other as opposed to duplicating, of course, Mr. Beiler serves on our board of directors, so he has a very direct involvement in what our goals and objectives are as an organization. We work with several of the OWEB staff in the field. The funds that we are providing to watershed councils support implementation of their watershed assessments, their on-the-ground projects. So once they've completed those processes through OWEB and they're out raising dollars through whatever sources are available to them, we are one of those sources that help them. So we've helped, for instance, Scappoose develop some restoration projects at a couple of at Hogan Ranch and Malarkey Ranch and have done some work in Young's Bay implementing placement of woody debris, removing dikes, and replacing culverts.
So, and then the monies that are going to the watershed councils to put these projects on the ground, that would be either federal funding or private funding. So, you're actually that's capital grants that could go to other councils. Then, is that how that would work,
Mr. Chair? Representative Dingfelder, yes. The funds that we're providing to councils are coming through our Bonneville funds, our NOAA funds, or other restoration dollars, usually from the public sector.
Question from Representative Clem.
May have hit it right at the end of your presentation. When you talk about state drug and pesticide take-back projects, is the drug referred to the pharmaceuticals that are ending up in the river, or what is that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clem, yes. What we're finding here and in other water bodies now in the United States is that there is growing levels of pharmaceutical products, and they're entering the water bodies in one of two ways. When we have unused portions of prescriptions, we often have been told in the past to dump them down into the sewer system, so to keep them away from kids and things like that. That turns out to not be the right thing to do with those. So DEQ, other agencies in Washington are holding take-back programs along with drug enforcement to make sure they go back to the right place, and we will be helping support those efforts so they're collected in a safe way and disposed of properly.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Beiler, we will be back tomorrow morning. We'll go to public testimony first, and then I do believe there will be time for you to close then and maybe to respond to any of the public testimony that we receive. And with that, we are adjourned for the day.